This is Mathematics After Hours.
Oh, hello! Welcome to episode 119, and wait for it. You might be able to hear in the background, of course. We're back in the pub. Let's have a little clink, shall we? That didn't sound very elegant.
Yeah, that was...
It's an awesome foursome.
Very aggressive.
Today, we've got Telmo, we've got Pete, Ben is the one you're listening to, and a new face and voice, the Joshua. Josh is here with us. Welcome. Welcome, friends. Welcome. Now, I'm going to start myself, just so I can give you an intro to how we do these podcasts. We start with a weekly update. What has everybody been up to in the areas that may interest our audience? And even if they won't, I'm going to tell them about my holiday to the Lake District, because I can. We walked around some lakes, as we have done for the last 20 years, without fail. But more interestingly, there was a trial run for an art project that my father and I are cooking up. We have a trip booked to Islay in Scotland, to visit some distilleries, have a lot of whiskey, and somehow travel from the distillery back to where we're staying legally. We haven't figured that part out yet. But what we're going to do while we're there is take some photos and record some audio and combine the two in a synergistic approach to make some kind of artistic something or other. The details have yet to be worked out. I was shamelessly planning to steal a bit of a format from the YouTube channel Grainy Days. Did I recommend Grainy Days?
I don't recall you recommending that channel.
Film photography stuff that I quite like. And one thing that's pretty fun that I'm definitely going to steal is recording the shutter sound of whichever camera we may be using, my film camera or my dad's Nikon D810 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Shutter sound, new photo appears, background noises that I may well have recorded, and potentially, well, the hope is that I compose a subtle synthy backdrop, but that's the plan.
That
Will it actually
wicked.
Happen? I don't know. We can dream. So we did that. We took a trip to where we knew there were some nice waterfalls in the Lake District and figured out how low or how slow we could have our shutter speeds to get that really creamy milk waterfall situation with the slow shutter speeds. Because of the film I was using, the amount of light we had and such, I don't think I will have been able to go slow enough to get the really smooth water. But we'll see. I've got four rolls of film to send away to the lab, and we'll see what comes back.
How does your father feel about your adoption of the analogue photography
process?
He's really
excited, because he's just all nostalgic about the whole thing. It's great. And I've picked up lots of tips from him over the way.
Is it real father-son bonding?
It's quite fun. It was really good when we went out to the waterfall. We did get absolutely dumped on by the weather on the way out, but everything survived in terms of the equipment. We just got very soggy.
Was it because of the whiskey as well?
No whiskey was involved before that particular trip. There will be later. Also, I remember maybe two episodes ago, did I tell you about I went on that night photography trip?
Yes.
To do some really long exposure stuff. It sort of worked, and I have learnt some things. The first is to take off the UV or sky filters that I have on my lens, which I completely didn't think to do, because on all of the, like, the light bulbs and the street lamps and such, I have this really obvious 6-point star bloom effect, which would be cool if you wanted it, but I didn't. So there was one picture I took of a pub on the river near me, and there's those nice sort of chains of Edison bulbs, which look quite vibey from a distance, but it's just a load of stars. It doesn't look that great. I did get a few pictures with some cars going past, so, you know, the classic red and white sort of trails. That was quite cool. And I also became familiar with what happens when you under and overexpose certain films, is you get weird color casts. So that time I was shooting on Kodak Ektar 100, which I think goes kind of purplish when overexposed, and it's really green when you underexpose it. But yeah, a learning experience.
Quite How fun. Did your 7-minute exposure go?
I did three of them because, I think it's called bracketing, where you underexpose and overexpose a stop of where you think it should be to maximize your chances of actually getting the shot. And It was just kind of boring. I did have my audiobooks playing, so I didn't get too bored, but it was quite cold, and I was just shivering there to myself, holding my little cable release, watching the timer on my phone, just hoping. But no, it was a cool experience. I think I got back at about 1 in the morning, I think, from that trip.
How did the actual photos turn out on that particular... those? Okay.
I will show you.
Yeah.
Of course,
well, show
our
me those
unfortunate
pictures now.
Listeners won't be able to see these pictures, but you will be able to imagine them to
or
yourself.
Or maybe you could
gently.
Post them on the
I could
Racadex,
do. I could put a couple
Facebook page.
On the Facebook page yeah. or the Instagram.
You could also do an audio description.
Ooh, audio description. Okay, let me find them because they are on my Googly Drive. One moment, please. Photos. Film. Is it number 6? It is number 6. Here we go.
Background music pops in.
Yeah. Telmo, make us some smooth jazz with your face.
Boop, 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 boop.
Okay, here we go. So this is a picture of the local pub, and you can really clearly see...
That's pretty cool.
...those stars
yeah.
that
oh,
I've got
yeah,
around all
yeah.
of the all of the lights, which, it's a vibe, but it's not the one I was hoping for. And interestingly, you can see between these two, this particular one and
yeah.
that one. Can you see
yeah.
it turns quite green?
Mm-hmm.
That was that colour cast thing I was talking about. Then... not the most exciting picture because it's just of a BP, but there's one with the nice light trails
no,
from a car.
No, that's great, man.
Which was quite cool. With that one, the green shift did kind of help for the BP colour scheme. And, yeah, giant star up on the top, which is, yeah, irritating. I will have to do a few more without the filters off just to check that is actually what went wrong. I think my favourite one... which I haven't rotated properly, is this guy. I'm going to have to hold it at a weird angle for you, just so you can sort of almost see it at the right angle.
Is that an alleyway?
Yeah, it's a little alleyway towards the river.
Mm.
And apart from the stupid stars, again, you can see some kind of lens flaring in there, which is quite fun. Compositionally, they're not the most interesting pictures. No, it was good fun. I might send you one that you can pop in the comments of the post once this podcast is online.
I shall do that.
Wonderful. And that's my week. Pete, you've just polished off your plate of parmesan and rosemary chips. I did smell the rosemary quite a bit. Here we go. Your week.
Well, this week I have been trying to resurrect my garden pond.
Oh, wonderful.
So we had the joy of trying to extricate a mat of lily roots and
oh, wow.
various
yeah.
other aquatic plants that had formulated over a 20-year period.
Ah, I remember you had some problems with herons before, didn't you?
Yes, we had herons that kept descending and devouring the koi carp.
Mm.
So we gave up having koi carp. And in our attempts to deter them from eating the fish, we put a green kind of netting
yeah.
over the top. Unfortunately, as time went on, that netting sort of sank down and became matted with the vegetation.
Oh, no.
So that was part of the...
the battle.
Yeah, the problem of trying to remove it. Again, I did have a go last year, bought a one of those water pumps that has the...
a macerator in it.
Yes, that can
yeah.
deal with sort of waste products,
yeah.
shall we say, and drained it. And all I was left with was this massive sort of 5-foot biscuit of roots and immobile...
tasty.
Detritus. So this year we realised that the mat actually floats, so it was easier to literally get in the pond with wellies
oh, yeah.
and use things like bow saws and other sort of cutting instruments and cut massive sections out of it and drag it up and put it onto the side.
Mm.
So we most probably removed easily possibly half a ton
wow.
of this mass. We kept the good stuff to one side and the rest will be dried out and disposed of. But basically, it was a good time to do it as we've been benefiting from some really nice weather around
oh, yeah.
the Easter period and took full advantage of it.
Awesome.
So that's what my week has contained.
Battling the pond.
Battling the pond.
Wonderful. Telmo, what have you been up to? It's been a while since we've had you on, so you might have quite a lot to catch us up on.
That's true. It's not just a week. It's more like, I don't know, 3 months, 4 months.
Every time.
I lost track of the time. Yeah, quite a lot of stuff happened. Obviously, as you guys might know, I'm just literally at the end of my course at Brunel. I've got a month left. I'm working on my dissertation, so it's been quite hectic lately with that. But I've taken so much of that course. It's really interesting. And in terms of particularly studio production, there's a few things I would like to share with you.
Fire away with your top tips.
Yeah, top tips, really. There's a few things that I've noticed that I could do with Ableton Live 11. This is particularly directed to my studio production module. And I had to do a task which was mixing and mastering only using Live 11.
No third-party stuff.
No third-party plugins, just using their own stuff.
Yeah, how familiar are you with it?
I have to say, after a fair amount of research and stuff like that, it's so much easier than doing it on Pro Tools or Logic.
Were you a Logic man before?
I was a Logic man, yeah. And I thought that mastering would be so much easier in Logic or even, as I mentioned, Pro Tools. I think Ableton Live is just surprising me more and more with time because of its versatility. Not only everyone knows Ableton, obviously, because of the sample works and the session view and stuff like that. But really, it's just amazing sounds, and thanks to Rory Mannion for really pushing this into me, my lecturer at uni, and really nailing these live band recordings and really hitting them on the good nail. So that's really exciting for me to be able to do a lot of stuff with Ableton without depending on anything else. There's also something really exciting that happened a couple of weeks ago. It was a modular introduction. I know that you guys, of course, you know,
did somebody say modular?
Did someone say modular? You guys are more than intermediate players on this game, as all of our listeners know. I try to sort of like ride the wave, but we had a very, very in-depth introduction, and we tried some stuff, and I think I'm easily getting more tempted by it. Yeah. I'm just
it's a dark art.
It is.
It'll get you, Telmo. Be careful.
It's getting in my head. No, it's fantastic. We've had like this really amazing. It was mostly like just Behringer stuff, Neutrons, a Model D, a couple of Instru stuff as well.
Instru, nice.
Yeah. So
great brand.
Rory brought his own, and we just patched a few things up. And it's just incredible, the sort of things. Again, I think I've mentioned this before. I'm particularly interested about trying this, particularly going to the guitar. But I need to take my time on it. My time will come at some point. In terms of personal life, there's PGypt. As you guys know, I've done a very interesting project. We've managed to raise or be a part of a charity that raised £1,200 for the Ukrainian families.
Nice one.
It's called Save the Children. We played in an event at St. Pancras Old Church, and it was
such a cool venue.
It's an amazing venue. I recommend anyone that's in town or just has seen their sort of yearly set, see what they're doing for the rest of the year. It's really an amazing place.
You can see the Hardy tree out in the graveyard.
Yeah, and the sound, the acoustics of the room. It's just something amazing. It was just me and Ina, so we did like a little duo thing. We played our PGypt singles and stuff.
Nice.
And that was amazing. That was a really good performances. There was some really interesting instruments, like the Lithuanian chanklas. I think I'm saying it right. It's some sort of scrapey harp thing that you put on your lap. It's
scrapey harp thing.
Yeah.
Technical terms.
Really interesting. Really, really interesting. Yeah, so PGypt again, we are working on a new announcement that soon to come. Mm. We've got a lot of songs for a full album.
Awesome.
This is actually the first time I'm talking this in the open public. Ooh, but we have...
Exclusive first
exciting.
Look.
Very exciting. We have the artwork for our actual record.
I've seen some of it.
Double-sided
EP. It's good looking.
Yeah, Ben likes it. Ben's
can
approved
we see it.
It
to tease the viewers?
Yeah, we can look at it and go, ooh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And nobody listening is going
to
have any idea.
What I have to say is that it involves cats. so we've got... we've decided to take this approach where our lead singer and composer Inesh went out and about and she wrote her songs from beginning to end. Instead of collaborating, we're doing our own stuff separately. Yeah. And then we're bringing it to the band. As it's a different approach to the stuff that we've done previously. So I think it will be interesting to hear how that will turn out. And yeah, so in terms of personal stuff, been doing that. The odd function gig here and there. Weddings, receptions, London gigs, singer-songwriters with Darcy Flow. If you guys are not familiar with Darcy's music, she's a great singer-songwriter. I've been supporting her and playing some stuff with her as well. But trying to cope with my personal self-doubt issues, which...
The curse of many an artist.
The curse of all artists. So, yeah.
Busy stuff.
That's me. That's me in a nutshell.
Hang in there for your dissertation. You'll make it one day.
Yeah, I'll make it.
Now,
just write lots of words.
Josh.
You know the format. You've seen what we're doing. What have you been up to this past week?
So, this past week I have been...
potentially longer since you've not been on before, of course.
Yeah, of course. So, this past week I've been talking back and forth with a couple of artists on about a couple of EPs that I'm going to be mixing.
Nice.
A couple of different kind of styles, to be honest with you. It's so the first one is like a hardcore punk band, just nice. A bassist and a drummer,
loud and proud.
Two vocals, so drummer and bassist are both doing vocals.
Cool.
It's live recorded, so it's going to be a bit of a weird one. They're kind of recording in the same room with a load of baffles to kind of separate them and everything, which is going to be
a bit with the gobos.
Exactly, a bit of a challenge. Get the noise gates in, get the compressors in, make sure everything's all flat. Then go from there. That's awesome. The plan. And then the other one is an old college friend of mine as well. Both of these people are friends of mine that I've met from college and things like that. The other guy, he's like a kind of progressive kind of metal guy, but it's like the kind of...
which kind corner of the progressive metal world are we talking?
Yeah, kind of like Polyphia, Jason Richardson, stuff like that. So
relatively melodic then.
Exactly, yeah. So it's going to be quite exciting to be doing that one because it's something that I haven't really done before. Actually just bought the Dark Glass plugin by Neural DSP and I've been using that.
Oh yeah, nice. Is that going to be for bass duty?
Exactly. Excellent. Yeah. So I found that it's really, really good, but it does need another kind of bass amp plugin just to
something
give it
else.
That low end oomph
gotcha.
Kind of thing.
Those guys are doing really great stuff, aren't they?
Definitely, yeah. So obviously they've got the cleany stuff, which I really enjoy myself.
Well, they've released also a lot of clean amps recently.
Yeah,
because
they did
the Tone King, the
Corey Wong's signature one, didn't they? As well as I think Tim Henson from Polyphia's got quite
the
clean stuff on it.
They did the Tim Henson one. Then they did the Corey Wong one, and now they've just released the Tone King Imperial.
Mm.
That one's quite good, actually. It's just kind of like a pedal platform kind of amp. It's got a few kind of pedals that go along with it as well.
Yeah.
And you can kind of get some quite cool tones out of it. There's a lot of new artists that have actually added presets to it as well, which I found quite interesting. Couple of friends of mine, in fact, which is quite cool.
Awesome.
Something that I'll be recommending later as well. And I've basically just been talking back and forth about ideas and how they want it mixed and things like that at the moment.
Are you going to get stuck in on any of the recording stuff as well, or is it just mixing later?
Well, I mean, it's remote, so one of them's based in Cornwall.
Oh yeah, cool.
So deepest, darkest Cornwall. The other one is in Bristol. So that's basically me at the moment.
Wonderful. Now, of course, the second and often chunkiest section of the podcast is news. And we've got some synthy stuff to talk about today. Pete, do you want to chat about that Buchla-flavoured What Has Behringer Done Now?
Yes, I could do. I don't know excessive amounts of it. I mean, obviously, they announced that last week that they're going to be producing one. And it's in the SCIF format.
Mm-hmm. I think it looks like the long one,
and
like the Neutron.
It's sort of standard Behringer sort of price for that. So it's got quite a lot of appeal if they've been very faithful to the circuitry and they can get that Buchla sound.
They mentioned they were going for the optocouplers for recall ability as well, which is quite bold of them.
Yeah, that's quite a unique bit. That's the bit that worries me, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, of course it will. We'll see how that goes.
Well, it's Behringer.
Behringer, digital.
Yeah.
See, the thing is with Behringer, I've always found that they've been very faithful to recreations, but at the same time, in some places, they've been lacking. But obviously, with Behringer especially, there is the odd gem.
Yeah, Neutron is my personal favourite.
Deep Mind for me.
Yeah, and even though we keep saying, oh, it's digital, run away, the Deep Mind's been fine with all the digital control. And of course, I've just totally spaced on what their mix is called. Not the big one, not the wing, the other one. Well, I don't know what... Where's it gone?
Are you looking
the
at
X32?
Me like...
You know things. The X32s, yeah.
But we're having this discussion today, isn't that because it's Midas?
Oh, yeah, because they didn't develop it.
Yes.
I forgot about that. They bought it.
So the Buchla, it's... tell us a little bit about the Buchla itself, because I don't know much how enigmatic is this synth in...
Well, in principle, it's working on the additive synthesis side of things. So it's... essentially it's West Coast synthesis,
okay,
opposed to East Coast, which is the Moog subtractive synthesis. The Buchler systems have been traditionally eye-wateringly expensive, so I'm thinking what we're saying for an E200.
An Easel with the touchplate keyboard, I think you're not going to get much change from $6,000. But essentially, you can normally get a couple of voices out of it and some interesting sequencing and a spring reverb for, about $6,000, I think.
And I'm thinking, last time I looked at an E200, which is one of the big systems, it was $20,000.
I think KMR is...
And that was the last time I looked, which was a long time ago.
So if you got $20,000 burning a hole in your pocket, then go for Pete's recommendation.
Why not?
Well, there are other options, other brands.
Other brands are available.
Last year, Tip Top Audio announced that they were going to do modules, and they were actually doing it in collaboration with Buchler.
Yeah, the real deal.
So they're officially kind of sanctioned.
What you're looking at up here.
So I've got the 281T. This is 175.
Yeah, actually really affordable and quite tempting looking to a lot of us modular
weirdos. It's a quad function generator 2811, Buchler and Tip Top Audio collaboration.
Them's the chaps. So the Buchler thing has been start with a simple waveform like a sine wave and use wave folders to make it harmonically complex rather than start with a complex waveform or a harmonically complex one like a saw or a square and just take off the high frequencies. That's the the two sides of the coin, though. Of course, the middle ground is where it gets most fun.
And typically they won't have filters and things like that in there.
It'll be a low pass gate, which is amplitude and a bit of top end at the same time. And they're quite percussive and plucky, and sometimes people describe them as sounding quite woody and sort of natural. But for a lot of money, who knows?
And personally, I'm more attracted to the Tip Top Audio offering
100%.
Because you're going to have the quality of build, and you can select because all the it's fully modular rather than the new Behringer system, which is going to be one slab in a small skiff.
Yeah, a semi-modular with its
they seem to focus
pre-patched
on that
stuff.
Yeah, well, they've already got that format to hand, so they just adapt it to whatever they're trying to squeeze into that size footprint.
In most of the comment sections on the articles about this, you'll get a lot of people going, ooh, are they going to do the touchplate keyboard as well? Because it is an interesting sequencer controller option. There's one that you might see around that you could get with the Easel rather than the almost familiar looking keyboard thing. They have one that's kind of eagle shaped.
Okay.
No idea how it works, but it's just kind of a strange input method, which I believe is quite... There it is. He's looking
at
right at it
now, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
No idea how it works. But
it's got
that's...
sort of A, B, C, D on top, and then it looks exactly like an eagle.
It's quite a classic Buchler element, that one.
This is great.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
so
cool,
people
right?
are calling for Behringer to rip that off as well.
Yeah.
Rip off.
I mean,
do
faithfully
worse.
Clone.
They make maybe a crow
make a tribute to.
Yeah, that's
maybe
that's
like a
better.
Pigeon.
Yeah, it won't be the Eagle, the Behringer Pigeon touchplate controller. You heard it here first, everybody. Right, so potentially that will turn up at some point, but who really knows, because chip shortages, production times, one day.
As I say, the only thing that worries me about it is that digital element.
Yeah, it's only time will tell whether it goes the way of the DeepMind or of the
Poly-D.
The Poly-D, your favourite thing in the world.
Yeah, the Poly-D.
Yeah. Right. Do you remember way back when Focusrite decided to buy Sequential or something?
Yes.
They have released a bit of a teaser trailer with Tom Oberheim himself and some other dude who I believe used to work with him on the synthesizers back in the day in a bar with Oberheim-shaped beer mat coasters to say, ooh, stuff is brewing. And that's all we can report. Stuff. Brewing. Oberheim. Focusrite. What do you think he might be doing?
Well, I'd like to think it'd be a two voice or
that
something.
You can actually buy.
Yes, actually afford.
Maybe it'll be the return of the OB6 type corner of the world.
About 5 years ago or so, Tom was threatening some modular, and he did show it at various trade shows.
Yes.
But it never turned into anything tangible that you could buy.
Maybe Focusrite behind him could change things.
Possibly.
Do you know what kind of stuff he was... filters...
I don't know what it actually
SEM
contained.
Stuff.
I can't remember. I cursorily watched some videos on the YouTube with him talking about the various modules, and at that time he was always saying they'll be out next year. And
oh, yeah.
Next year they weren't out. And
that was without a pandemic for an excuse.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, keep your eyes peeled on Captain Oberheim himself, and we'll find out.
I like what they say, get ready to party like it's 2099.
Mm, yes. We'll see. We shall see. In 2099, we may have a release. Who knows? Right, the last bit of news is something I'm personally quite excited for. It's the new Volker FM. Do you guys know about this one? Do you know about this one?
I knew that there was a revision due, but I haven't really looked into it at all.
Yes, indeed. It looks very similar, and it just makes it into a quite complete instrument. So, let me read you the specs. So, rather than the four voices of DX7 that you used to have, it's now a six voice. Same physical size as the old one, still battery-powered or DC-powered if you want it. And velocity-sensitive, which I didn't know the old one wasn't, if I'm honest. It has effects in it now, a chorus and a reverb, separately editable. Amazing, since it sounds a bit sad and alone with no effects. The MIDI has changed. It's got in and out on 3.5mm dongles rather than just MIDI in. Some people are frustrated that it's not USB, but personally I prefer DIN MIDI of some form. There's changes to the internal sequencer as well, with motion sequencing and stuff like that, extra arpeggiation kind of bits, which is pretty cool. There's a parameter randomization option should you want to quickly get some inspiration from strange sounds. Pattern chaining, full Sysax compatibility with old DX7 presets. Easy editing, not really, because it's never easy on a DX7 alike, given it's got a few more knobs, but it's still the kind of limited access, and that's it. But yeah, it just makes it even more capable in the small box. In terms of pricing, what have we got? Have we got pricing?
Well, the old one is 119, isn't it?
Is that on a certain reputable online retailer?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, okay, let's see if I can find a price anywhere. Volker FM2 on Korg's website. Come on, give me a shop. Thomann, out of stock. Obviously, it's not really reached anybody yet. Mm. On request, they're saying 158.
Okay.
That's not too bad, actually.
I think it's very exciting, to be honest, because we know the lack of functionality that the old one had, and this one comes and solves it.
The four voices were just not quite there. A frustration with the old one.
I think so. If you, obviously, plugging this into a full-size keyboard, you can totally get nostalgic.
Absolutely. It'll make me miss my DX11. Why did I get rid of it? Oh, well.
So tell me, you were looking into getting a DX7, I think.
I was.
Why did that not happen?
I have no idea, honestly. At the time, it was simply because my car had this absolutely stupid thing where just everything was breaking at the same time, and life just got in the way, and I just had to call the guy who was selling it, and I said, listen, I'm not going to be able to pick it up. I don't know. I just need to throw my car. Never got in touch with him again, which is I still regret up to this day, because the DX7 prices are still going up, and they're skyrocketing more and more, than actual any Junos.
Yeah. I think when I was looking, about 600 quid was the going rate. What is it these days? That was only a couple of years ago. Yeah. Well, pandemic. 4 years ago.
So beware that a couple of years ago, I found this one at 250.
250?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And I could have gotten it for 250. And they're now like £800.
Oh, damn. At least they're not as horrifying as some analog vintage stuff.
No, because they're digital. So,
Oh, well.
Yeah. So I think it's an exciting product. I don't know how Pete feels about it.
I'm a bit ambivalent about FM synths.
It's not for everyone, I get it. I really like wavetable synthesis myself. I think there's a couple of things that Josh had in mind as well.
Yeah. Is there what happenings are brewing in the guitar world?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Chase Bliss just recently released the Habitat Echo Collector delay. Seems quite cool. It's got all the kind of MIDI capability that you've got with Strymon and everything like that, and then all of the dip switches to engage lots of different
modes. Famous Chase Bliss huge row of dip switches
exactly.
on the back.
It's like
so they're very proud of that.
You could write your dissertation on what every single one of those does. There you go, Tommy. That's an idea.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Not another one, please.
You mentioned this might be a slight departure for Chase Bliss, a little bit different from the previous ones.
Yeah. To be honest with you, it's not in terms of how the actual pedal works. It's more to do with kind of the artwork of the pedal, because it's very kind of different to how
very
Chase
yellow.
Bliss.
It looks a bit more straightforward than previous ones might have been.
Exactly, yeah. So Chase Bliss,
not that any of them are straightforward, put that out there.
With old Chase Bliss stuff, it was more kind of like space based. There was a big black theme, so obviously a lot of their pedals were black with just like white writing with kind of spacey themes. And now they've completely turned it around and they've gone bright yellow with
candy colours.
So yeah, what do you think about it, Tomo?
Well, what I think about Chase Bliss is that...
Because I know you've tried it.
Well, I've tried it. I think it was last weekend. I have to say, about the brand itself, so they've rebranded the whole marketing of Chase Bliss. So we've got a new logo. We've got, I think they might be coming out with a new, sort of like, entirely different line of products. But, so what we've seen so far with Chase Bliss is that they're always innovating with something different. They've done their amount of guitar pedals, guitar-based pedals, but always with their trademark dip switches in the back.
MIDI stuff in there.
MIDI stuff, six knobs, two switches in the front.
Yep.
Very much a complete compact size, high-end boutique pedal. And you're right when you say they're sort of like gone full circle and they did all the dark stuff and the flangers, the extreme reverbs, the choruses, the vibratos, the flangers. But what they've seemed to have arrived at is this sort of place where... well, first of all, Chase Bliss never does anything that's absolutely... It's over the top, but the actual playability with the pedal is very subtle. So it's in the minute differences and the little changes that you might have. It might be the most useless switch you might think, but it actually changes a lot of things. And the Habit Echo Collector delay, what it does is that it's sort of like... creates this randomized glitchy delay for you. It kind of like, all you need really is one single note and sort of like composes itself for you. It's a very much a sort of pedal that it's very hard to get into. I found it myself that it was really hard for me to get into, but once because I was overplaying. Once I've started to simplify my playing, I saw myself actually making more musical stuff. Therefore, I think the Chase Bliss Habit has got a lot of potential for not only guitarists, but also not only synth players, but synth enthusiasts. Anyone that is working with harmony or melody on any way, with cellos, with acoustic instruments, whatever. Just give it a go.
I'd be interested in seeing it with some vocals, to be honest.
Yeah.
It might be a bit strange, pretty but cool. It might bring out some kind of cool colours.
Oh, here's a question. You two, both guitarists... typically, you'd be standing up and smashing pedals with your feet. How do you feel about that kind of genre of pedal where you'd probably want to be cross-legged on the floor, playing a note and fiddling for half an hour? What's the workflow like? Because with a synth on the table, pedal next to it, easy. How's it work for guitarists when you've got to get in there and tweak?
Well, with the Habit, you can have it just as a normal delay. You can have it just as a normal delay or a normal echo.
Seems like a waste of a lot of money if you're buying Chase
Bliss.
That's
the thing. If you want the plus extra functionability, I think you need to do it at home with your studio.
Exactly. At the same time, though... when you're playing live, you can also run it to a track and you've got a MIDI track running in the background.
Yep.
And then you don't have to get down on your all fours and tweak all your knobs. And
yeah, as long as you've got your preset set up, you can have it autopilot for you.
Exactly, yeah.
I bet there's a pedal called autopilot somewhere.
Let's be real, there's a pedal called everything in the world.
That's true.
Everything in the world by Chase Bliss.
Right.
Yeah, so it's definitely a 7 out of 10 for me. Just
7 out of
10.
It's
a bit scary.
Well, I still need to try it, but with my job, I got to handle one a little while ago.
You held it in your hand.
Yes,
put
I
it
held
in a box
it in my
and
hand,
then it left.
Put it in a box and said goodbye.
Yeah. Good work.
But the build quality for it is really solid, but that's always been the case with Chase Bliss. And obviously, I'm going off of Talmo's word with how good it is, so I'd give it a 7 out of 10 as well.
7 out of 10.
I think it's about that... sorry, just to conclude, I know because we keep talking about this, but it's about that probability factor that a device might give you. And sometimes you may be surprised with the stuff that you're interacting, and that's so much out of the modular school.
That's the only way I made an EP.
That's exactly
it's by
it.
The modular doing it for me.
but that's you know, you see a lot of guitarists getting into that. And in my particular case, I'm bringing back the Ableton 11 stuff because I'm genuinely in love with some of the new features, like the chance feature that you can use on Ableton 11. If you input any MIDI chords or a MIDI melody, there is now a little window that allows you to pop up. And imagine that you have a four-bar loop with repetition, you can choose the chance of that note being hit by percentage. So that opens up so many possibilities for not only introducing your modular sounds into an Ableton, but you can have Ableton interacting with your own modular system itself. So you can be John Cage for a minute if you want. But I suppose it's this unpredictability that I think it's really good that Ableton is doing it, because it's sort of like talking back with these systems and creating organic music, which is great.
I mean, our favorite module of recent times would be your Stochastic Inspiration Generator, which very much lives and breathes that workflow.
Yeah, so if you don't have money to get one of those, and if you have Ableton 11,
yep, it's there.
It's there, so give it a go.
I bet they're probably still working on the waiting list for the SIG, aren't they? Probably.
I haven't checked the website recently.
You don't need to, you got one.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're still trying to fulfill the waiting list now.
Yeah, well, that brings us round to the final segmentio of episode 119. That is the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. I did it in one breath. Who's ready first? Pete? No. Telmo? What's your
I'm ready. I'll go. And Go 4x4 is the name of my recommendation today. Go 4x4 is a YouTube channel, and the description for the YouTube channel is as it follows. We love camping, off-roading, and we love videography. You keep watching, and we keep filming. Ah. It's essentially a YouTube channel about camping. And if you...
In a four-wheel drive car.
Exactly. If you miss your good old times... Obviously, through the pandemic, we've just been through a cold winter. If you long for a bit of outdoors and you haven't quite have the guts to go out,
or you're just in England yet, and it's still raining,
or you're in England, then you might just want to give it a go. There's really cool videos like solo camping in the rain, solo camping, relaxing, cozy vibes. It's really interesting because you've mentioned like his car is amazing. He's got like a 4x4 Jeep, and he's got everything super...
Has he got one of those like tent boxes on the roof or something?
The sort of like the tent comes from the back of his Jeep.
Oh yeah, interesting.
And it sort of like follows behind him. He opens up the back of his car, and his everything is just so nice and tidy. Yeah. He's got like a gas oven, and he's got all the utensils that you might need to cook a meal. The last one that I've seen, I think it was the coolest one. He went camping with a friend and with his dog. So it was his dog's birthday. So he not only made like a burger for his dog, but he went swimming with him, and they were just having a good time. It started to rain, and you know, it's just these vibes that is very wholesome, really.
It's got a bit of hashtag van life about it.
It does, yeah. Nice. Yeah. He spends a whole day, sleeps over, and then the next morning he leaves, and you get to go through it with him.
Awesome. What was the name of the channel again?
Go 4x4.
Wonderful. 4x4. Equally nature-ish related, potentially, a channel called Serpa Design, one word, S-E-R-P-A, Design. This is a chap from the land of the USA who does terrariums, vivariums, paludariums, other ariums of varying kinds that might house animals, potentially, or just, in fact, plants. But it's a really cool way of having a bit of nature in the home. You know the little glass jar we have on our coffee table that you saw yesterday? That would count as a terrarium. But he makes ones that are way better than mine, with waterfalls, and he's making these sort of sediment layers at the bottom and putting the right plants in.
How
so he can just
they?
Seal it. He's got some really tiny ones, like 5 centimeters long, and huge, giant glass jars, and more classic aquarium style boxes. But it's quite calming just watching him make these things, put some sand in a thing, plant some plants, and yeah. There was a brilliant video that he did where he was saying how to cultivate your own moss, where with a lot of these setups, moss is quite a key part to just fill in the green space in the background. But of course, you need a lot of moss. So he's saying, you know those really useful boxes, the clear plastic ones with the lids? He's saying, put some sediment down, grab some moss, and it'll just propagate. But he said the smell when you open up the lid of the moss tub, it just smells like kind of a a forest when it's been raining.
Oh.
Now I just want to propagate my own moss at home. It's that kind of channel. He also looks after animals. He's actually got a series about his pond. Maybe you can get some inspiration for pond life, Pete.
There's something for you.
But yeah, it's relaxing. There's nature. Serpa Design. Who's next? Joshua.
Fair enough. It's
what
all
do you
me.
Got?
So the media slash stuff that I am recommending at the moment is an album by a band called Inglorious called We Will Ride. Yeah.
I've heard one of their tunes, but I've no idea what it is. But yes,
yes.
Far away.
So they're an awesome kind of five-piece band. They've got a keys player as well, but he's not in the music videos. He's just like kind of
studio man
behind the scenes behind the Marshall cabs at the gigs, you know.
He's just hiding
the synth man hiding behind everyone.
Is he still wearing a cape while he's hiding though? I want to
of
be
course,
Rick Wakeman.
Of course. But no, this album's really cool just because it goes through a lot of different kind of vibes. It's got some kind of bluesy vibes, it's got some more kind of metal-y vibes, it's got some very chilled out vibes, and then it's got some crazy, crazy, crazy vocal harmonies because the vocalist Nathan James, he's been a classically trained vocalist for 20 years, which is, I think, since he was 12 or something like that.
Amazing.
Quote me if I'm wrong. Someone can point that out if they like. But he's extremely talented when it comes to vocals, and he's orchestrated this band himself and really just gotten the right musicians for him. And some of the songs are fantastic. Like the title track, We Will Ride, probably some of the best vocal harmonies I've heard in the past few years. She Won't Let You Go. It's a song about this crazy girl that the band met on a night out. And she, for some reason, was hitting one of the guys and wouldn't leave him alone. And one of the lines is, redhead lady got a nasty reputation. She sees you, she won't let you go. So there you go. I'll leave you that with that little nugget of information.
Wonderful. What's the one song that I know, Inglorious? One of their top tunes. Not from this
Holy
album.
Water?
It's older. What's their top stuff
Holy
on this
water,
motif?
Until I Die.
Damn, I'm going to have to look when I get home because they're right. So familiar.
I'll show you afterwards if you want. We'll see.
Awesome, Pete. Take us away. Finish us off. What do we got?
This is a little shorty because I've actually changed tracks and I'm not going to recommend the one I was going to recommend. Ooh. But this one should interest you particularly because I know that the gentleman I'm going to mention is a particular favourite of yourself.
Okay, I'm excited.
So in the past we've talked about Christian Henson and his channel and his studio, but as we all know, he's connected to Spitfire Studios in a big way, one of the founder members, director, or I don't know quite what his position there is. Mm-hmm. But he was doing a particular video on their channel, and it was a studio tour of Olaf Arnold's studio in Iceland.
Yes! That was amazing.
He's so good.
I have seen it, and it's just amazing.
It is a great video. So, do you like it?
Have you seen
it?
Did I
say it's amazing?
I've watched it quite a few times. I keep watching it over and over. It's brilliant.
I think it was just interesting on the studio tour level.
Mm.
And obviously, if you're particularly into Olaf and his style of ambient piano, talks about his workflow and how he approaches things in that particular video. So that's my very brief recommendation for this week, which is the Olaf Arnold Studio Tour by Christian Henson, but it's on the Spitfire audio channel.
It's a good one. There was that one Korg polysynth that he has on kind of the left-hand side of his main desk where there's maybe like three of them still going or something. That was quite good.
Did you see like his Echo Chorus, the Roland Echo Chorus that he...
I think...
He had three of them because they
keep
breaking.
Not the, it's not the Space Echo, is it?
No,
or
no, no.
Is it the purple one?
No, it's the orange one.
Oh, the orange one.
Yeah,
right,
so
right.
I think it's the Echo Chorus, they call it, because he uses
that... It
came
after the Space Echo, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he uses it to thicken... not only the synths, but also to sort of like get some more resonance out of the other instruments. It's just an unbelievable video, absolutely.
And it's really long as well, so you can just put it on, grab a drink, and just slide into the comfort of his home studio. Well, it's not really a home studio, is it? I don't know.
Well, great, it feels anyway. Like a woodshed, and it also feels like an industrial, artistic play. Very inspiring, really. It's totally worth watching.
I think there's several workspaces, because he was saying that he was in the upstairs space, and he's come downstairs and remodeled that area, and there's some other artists in the other space upstairs.
Right. The whole thing used to belong to Sigur Rós.
Oh, really?
Right. Yeah, that's. I think he said that at the beginning. I'm not going to spoil this for our listeners. Please
go watch it. There's at least half an hour of goodness in there. Well, thank you for listening. And also thank you for tuning in to another pub episode. Those are our roots. If you haven't, maybe check out some of the older ones. What kind of numbers would those be when it was predominantly pub-based?
Certainly episodes 1 through to 8, possibly.
Lots of pub action.
Before the pandemic struck.
Indeed. And you'll also hear Andy's sweet tones, which we haven't had for a long time. Good stuff back there if you do feel like trawling the back catalogue. Please do. But thank you for joining, and we hope you join us for the next episode. Farewell.